Australia's Gotye has a worldwide hit on his hands with the single Somebody That I Used to Know. So ahead of the U.S. release of the album Making Mirrors and a show February 2nd at the El Rey, we have the U.S. performance debut of Gotye next on KCRW.
This is Gautier. We're going to play some more songs here on KCRW. Very cool to be at the Village Recorders, amazing studio, standing in a room. Make some noise at home, because we're not hearing it. This is called Easy Way Out. You know a little bit about what's going on in the studio here. This next song is going to feature Lucas Taranto playing the bass guitar, the slap bass guitar. It's a peculiar song about a home organ that my parents gave me a couple of years ago as a Christmas present, called a Lowry Cotillion. It's a love song to technology. It's called State of the Art.
Like kids spend the night at home at the cotillion. But the neighbors around stop the bus and all the pain and move from the living to the kitchen. And go to state of the art. The magic swing piano really is astounding. And we can't tell them apart. But these amazing simulations end up sounding even better than the real thing.
Time to hear the results.
Thank you.
Gautier has crashed the KCRW charts recently with what is shaping up to be one of the breakout songs of the year. That's Somebody I Used to Know. But as is certainly the case here, the overnight success belies the story of an artist. And getting to this point in time, here to tell us his story, Gautier, live in studio. Good morning.
Hello.
So, you know, with this song, you have really struck a nerve with folks. And, you know, as I mentioned in the intro, you know, you've been making music for some time. So give us a little background on you. Now that you've got our attention worldwide, tell us, you know, where you're from and how long you've been making music.
I've been making music one way or another since I was about 15, I suppose. That's when I started playing drums. I'm a drummer first and foremost, I think. But I seem to be doing less and less of that these days, with more production and you know, singing vocals in my shows. Since sort of picking up the drums, since harassing my parents to get me a drum kit when I was in my mid-teens, I started writing songs just kind of intuitively, responding to stuff that I was listening to and playing around with the family piano and nutting out how to use synthesizers and computers to record music and produce it myself. And yeah, I guess, you know, I've put out quite a few records in Australia, both as Gautier and also with another rock and roll band called The Basics. So this is like the eighth record I've been involved in one way or another.
It's funny. It's kind of reminds me of sometimes the Grammy nominations for Best New Artist come out. Yeah. Inevitably, there's one artist where it's like, they've been around for a decade now.
Yeah.
And so it kind of feels like that with your history. Mm. Well, is it surreal to kind of at this moment in time have a song that really has broken through for people?
Yeah, I mean, to see how strong the response has been and how quickly it happened, I didn't quite believe it at first because I suppose, you know, it's taken me a while to make this new record, which is called Making Mirrors, sort of up to two and a half years. And that's been the case with most of the records I've done under the name Gautier. So when I put out the last one, it was sort of 2006 in Australia. It took me till 2008 to put it out in Europe and in Japan and places like that. But even then, I'd say, you know, the internet was not as prevalent in terms of a distribution of music, and YouTube wasn't as influential in terms of, you know, sort of things going viral. Mm. So when this video came out and sort of, you know, seemed to go viral in a matter of weeks, that's been kind of exciting to see that happen.
Well, it's amazing, just a sign of the times on how music is discovered these days, because your video on YouTube has, you know, between 5 and 6 million
It cracked views. 10 million the other day.
Oh, my God.
I know, it's the thing. It seems to exponentially keep increasing.
Well, that's terrific.
Yeah. I feel a bit like I might be on some kind of crash course at being a one-hit wonder after 10 years of working on my music.
Well, the good news is there's a lot more to your album.
Thanks.
And, you know, I've been playing other songs and I want to talk about those. But, you know, tell us the album title, Making Mirrors. Is that to suggest that, you know, these songs are reflections of you or your life experiences?
Yeah, they're definitely that. With all the records I've put out, I've kind of always tried to be led by the artwork first. I'll find a piece of art that I think represents, I don't know, the color or the sense that I sort of think is in the music, and then look for a phrase that seems to sort of have a double meaning or comment on the look of the artwork, as well as sort of mean something, you know, to me in terms of the music itself. So yeah, it seemed to sort of hit both those marks for me. That it was a piece of art by my dad that he did with watercolors in the 80s that he discarded and that was left amongst some old newspapers and bills for many years until I happened upon it while cleaning up some old junk in the barn at my folks' place. And I sort of chose that for my album artwork and did a bit of tinkering with it. When I sort of definitely decided that that was the artwork for the front cover, I set about trying to find a name. And then, yeah, this kind of sense of mirrors and reflections and angles and kind of songs, I guess, being a vehicle for not only self-reflection but also mulling over your sort of thoughts about the things around you and people around you, the world around you. Yeah, that's sort of what led me to that title.
Do you dabble in the visual arts at all yourself?
I used to. I was a very creative 5 and 6 year old. In kindergarten, I used to paint with oils and watercolor and all sorts of things. My mother, maybe very presciently, kept all this artwork for years that I did when I was sort of 3, 4, 5, 6 years old. So I've drawn upon that in years since, and a lot of it has become, yeah, artwork for my records. Same with my dad's stuff. It's often old stuff. It's similar to, I guess, because I sample a lot of stuff in my records, and one of the processes I find really fun is investigating the kind of peculiar, usually more underground or odd, world of music that exists out there, especially in thrift stores and dusty old vinyl that I've never heard of. It's a bit similar, but sort of within my family, that I go searching through artwork from our past and co-opt it for something new.
You know, the album sounds very polished, so that has something to do with your experience making music. But I wonder if it's self-produced, or did you work with anyone?
I did produce it myself, but I have a fantastic collaborator named Francois Titez. He does additional production on songs in terms of, he mixed this record and he mixed my last record as well. So we'll work pretty closely together on the mixing side of things, and during that process there'll usually be some elements of sound that he will, you know, sort of bolster or add to or suggest ideas that he may compose some bits and pieces for. But yeah, mostly I kind of just work by myself in isolation, coming up with following my whims and idiosyncratic interests. Yeah, and then I will sort of sometimes show things to Francois along the way, and then he's sort of just a fantastic sounding board, someone who can maybe suggest whether I'm sort of, you know, tapping into something interesting or not, and if, you know, if I'm not, then maybe a direction I could head to make it interesting. So yeah, we work in a kind of back and forth way like that, rather than sort of, you know, spending weeks in a studio together. I'll mostly work by myself, but then sort of, you know, throw ideas at him and see what, you know, if he sends me back on another path.
I wonder about the music scene that you're coming from, although, you know, you say you work more so in isolation, and, you know, I do wonder about Melbourne in Australia, which, you know, from our position, it seems like really creative and thriving musically. But tell us about the scene there in Melbourne.
You can go out in Melbourne and I think sort of almost any night of the week and see, you know, a funk band or, you know, a big band doing all, you know, trad jazz to a dub reggae group somewhere, or, you know, maybe a pop act that's in the charts at the moment doing a show somewhere at a sort of stadium venue. So you're spoiled for choice in terms of, you know, different cliques and scenes and sort of different styles of music and arts you can go and see. But I often feel a bit like some of the decisions I've made pragmatically because of, you know, wanting to have a small studio space or keep my gear somewhere or, I don't know, have cheaper rent so that I could put more of my savings into making music of my own has meant that I haven't always lived that close to the kind of cultural heart of Melbourne. So I've kind of removed myself a bit, lived in the suburbs or lived down at the beach an hour out of town. So, I actually never feel like I've sort of been part of a musical scene, you know, with other bands or artists that I've, you know, particularly musically meshed with and sort of where we've sort of come through together. But there's definitely, you know, a number of Melbourne artists I really love and I think make really fantastic music.
Well, you do work with a woman named Kimbra on the song Somebody I Used to Know. She is from New Zealand, though. And had you worked with her before? How did you hook up for that song?
We met about 5 years ago in Melbourne. She'd, I think, just moved over to Melbourne from New Zealand then. And she was covering one of my older songs in her set. She was doing an amazing version, looping herself on guitar and vocals live. So I went to see her play in this really tiny club in Melbourne. And we just sort of got to know each other. We didn't really stay in touch very much after that. But then, yeah, at the start of this year, Francois, actually, while we were mixing or looking to mix this song, he suggested I should, you know, get in touch with Kimbra because he thought she might be really great. So, yeah, it's just one of those examples of ways that Francois was really good at suggesting good things for me to explore. So I dropped Kimbra a line and she really loved the song and it went from there.
Did you have a feeling about this song when you finished it? Did you have the sense that you really had something special here?
I had that spark maybe a bit more so at the start, because it was a bit of a challenge to finish, and I suppose finding Kimbra and her, you know, making the vocal part really come to life and really nailing it and bringing that kind of two-part story together to fruition, that kind of came 5-6 months after I initially had that energy of going, oh, I think there's something in this song. And especially when I had the idea of, it wasn't initially written as a two-person song, I just kind of wrote it very linearly, and as I made my way through sort of the end of the first chorus of writing, I realized that there wasn't very much else for, you know, my part or my character in the song to sing, and only then did I go, well, I think I should introduce, you know, a curveball, something else, another story. What should that story be? Should it be, you know, a voice in my head? Should it be, you know, a different tense? Or should it be another character? Should it be the girl? So, from sort of making that decision and then writing that verse and then the kind of counterpoint of that other character, it was about 5-6 months until, say, finishing Kimbra's vocals and then mixing the track. And that effectively single-handedly held up the whole finishing of the record for that period, for like half a year. So on some level, when I finished the track, I still felt like, you know, I've got something really good here, but I almost felt more relief rather than elation because there were a lot of points in that 5-6 months where I was kind of sitting there going, oh, I might just have to let go of this song. This had a lot of promise, but it's just not meant to be or something. Yeah, but so it's a good thing I stuck with it.
Well, we are so happy for you, and you're very charming, so thank you for spending time with us. Gautier is live on Morning Becomes Eclectic.
Thanks, Jason. Okay, this is a song called Somebody That I Used To Know. My last record, it's called Heart's a Mess.
to bend. Let me occupy your mind as you do
Yeah, thanks for listening. This is a song. It's called I Feel Better.
the U.S. radio performance debut of Australia's Gautier from the Village Studios on KCRW. Well, massive thanks to Gautier. Also, Kimbra and the band. Guion Wright, our sound engineer at the Village, assisted by Nelson Lugo. Robert LaFond, web video producer, assisted by John Bessier. Ray Guarna edited the session for broadcast. Special thanks to John Watson, Campbell McNeil, Tina Morris, Jeff Greenberg, and all our friends at the Village Recorder. Paul Shapiro, production assistant here in studio today. Ariana Morgenstern, the producer of Morning Becomes Eclectic. This session was made possible in part by 11 Music.